Hey, everybody, I'm Rick Sanchez. This is the Week in Review, and here is some of what we're going to be talking about.
Turn the page on the last decade of what I believe has been contrary to where the spirit of our country really lies.
But the last decade, of course, the last 3.5 years, has been part of your administration.
The American people are entitled to know when a foreign power is attempting to exploit our country's free exchange of ideas.
Kamala Harris gives her first interview, as you saw. How'd she do? Also, Merrick Garland warns about election interference once again. I'm Rick Sanchez. This is Direct Impact. And hey, what do you say we talk about these things? Okay, here we go. There's a lot to talk about because a lot has happened over the last week. And joining us now to go through some of the events of the week is the Convo Couch host, friend of the show, we can say, Craig Pasta Giardula. Every time I say pasta, I say pasta fajoule, but it's talking about Pasta Giardula. Craig, thanks so much for joining us, my friend. Look forward to the conversation.
So do I, Rick.
So there's this outcry with tens of thousands of people joining in right now. This has been taking place for quite a while now, over the last 4 or 5 days in Israel. It's a citizen outcry. You've seen it. It's caused by, first and foremost, the deaths of 6 hostages. But who are Israelis, citizens, really angry at? These people, these tens of thousands of people who have taken to the streets. Mostly, they're angry at their own government. Let me show you what these protests look like. So a lot of those protesters are angry mostly because of the news that has recently come out, just appeared, by the way. It's written by an Israeli newspaper. It details how there was this recent deal, right? And this deal would create a ceasefire and the return of the hostages. And these people are angry that that deal didn't come, you know, wasn't consummated. And what's weird is Israel agreed to it. Hamas agreed to it. They both said, hey, let's return the hostages, let's do a ceasefire, and this thing will be over, right? Wrong. Because then Israel's war cabinet said, no, 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 let's not do this thing. Let's not do the ceasefire, let's not agree to the hostages being returned. They essentially, according to this newspaper in Israel, they sabotaged their own deal, right? And then they raided the tunnel in Gaza where the hostages were, and the hostages died. That's why people in Israel are teed off, right? It seems like an obvious case of, I don't know, is it incompetence? Is it a deliberate aggression? Do they just not want this thing to end? Craig, I'm going to bring you in. What's your take?
Well, at least we know who's in charge over there in Israel, right? The war cabinet, at the end of the day, are the ones calling the shots. Yeah. And you see these protests, Rick. You start to think, like, maybe we're going to get something out of this. Maybe the Israeli government will finally be scared. I don't know, because Israel and the United States, they're the most propagandized citizens out there. So, I mean, we can only hope. I don't want to see any violence. But, you know, at the end of the day, if the government isn't scared of their own citizens, nothing will change.
Yeah, it is. It is impressive to see people out on the streets, and you know, and you got kudos to Israel. I've been to Israel. I don't know if you've been to Israel. You know, it's actually, interestingly enough, one of the most democratic places on earth. There is no shortage of people there expressing their opinions and people saying what they think. People who disagree with their government, et cetera. And yet, when it comes to this particular issue, you're right. Man, it looks like it's Bibi's way or the highway, right?
Yeah, I mean, listen, I have never been to Israel like yourself, but... Yeah. From what I understand, that they're a little bit less willing to deal with the Palestinians than they were maybe 20, 30 years ago.
Yeah.
The Norm Finkelstein mentality has kind of flown out the door, but that's years of programming and propaganda. So, I mean, if there are those voices out there, Rick, I hope they break through, because this war is just, it's a tragedy. Now, 40,000 dead, I mean, when's it going
to
stop?
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right. By the way, according to some estimates, it's triple that number that you just mentioned. Okay, there's perhaps only one country in the world that is more obedient to Israel than the U.S., and that country, by the way, is the U.K. But now, for the very first time, we are seeing a little bit of a kink in that armor. Listen to this. This is the British Foreign Secretary. Did you hear this? Here he is announcing to his parliament a change in the money and the funds that's going to be sent to Israel.
I inform the House today the assessment I have received leaves me unable to conclude anything other than that for certain UK arms exports to Israel, there does exist a clear risk that they might be used to commit or facilitate a serious violation of international humanitarian law.
So he says, look, if they're violating international law, then we're not going to send them all of the funds that we owed them. We're going to keep back some. It's not all the funding, but it's certainly a significant message that they're sending, that he's sending. But wait, there's more. We've now learned the prime minister, after getting a call from Washington, appears to be pushing back, saying that by not sending the arms, we would hurt the ceasefire. So they should go ahead and send all the arms, because if you don't send it to them, somehow the ceasefire would be affected. Personally, I don't see the connection between one thing and the other. Do you, Craig?
No, I do not. I think this is more about the pitchforks coming to the gate. Once the pitchforks come to the gate, we got to give the citizens something to calm them down. So to me, this is nothing more than lip service. I mean, the Balfour Declaration came out of Great Britain, for crying out loud. So I think at the end of the day, you're always going to see, no matter what, England aligned with the state of Israel. They'll give them what they want at the end of the day.
Yeah, and it's funny that, you know, you almost knew that as soon as we played that clip, and not us, but others played that clip, that somebody in Washington would pick up the phone and call the Prime Minister of Great Britain and say, hey, whoa, what did you guys just do? Let's rethink this. And we need an argument against it. The argument is, we're on the brink of a ceasefire deal, and this could interfere with the ceasefire deal. Now, I will say this. Look, if they're really on the brink of a ceasefire deal, thank goodness, great. However, they said this about 100 times in the last year, that they're on the brink of a ceasefire deal, and there's no damn ceasefire deal.
Yeah, and a ceasefire now, what's that going to do? I think they're obtaining their objective, and that was never to really get rid of Hamas. It was to ethnically cleanse Palestine, and they want that land. I mean, even Jared Kushner's come out and said, hey, we're going to get some beachfront property for you at the end of the day. I think all Israelis, especially the ones in the government, had that in mind. And they're not going to stop until they obtain that.
There appears to be a shakeup in the Ukraine government, the most significant being the resignation of the country's foreign minister. This is a big deal. This guy, Dmytro Kuleba, my Ukrainian not so good. He's one of Ukraine's most recognizable faces on the international stage. This is a guy who goes around the world telling countries why they need to back Ukraine, right? He quit. He resigned. He's out. Ikse, nixe, afuera. It also seems that Ukrainian President Zelensky's gamble when he chose to divert thousands of troops across into the Russian border is, let's just say, not working, right? That's according to most Western... military experts are saying this. Not Rick Sanchez, not Craig. Here's a retired colonel who appeared on the Hill.
I don't think this is a success on the Ukraine side at all. As a matter of fact, I think that time may prove that this hastened their potential military loss. And let me explain why. When you're talking about sending between 15 and 20,000 total soldiers into a country the size of Russia, there's literally no chance that can have any kind of success, because Russia just has too many resources, personnel, ammunition, air power, et cetera, and that is basically a dead man walking. It's not going to be too much longer before Russia is going to put this out.
It reminds me of the old saying guys like you and I used to say on the schoolyard when some other kid was threatening us, if you're going to mess with me, you better bring an army. I mean, that's kind of what's going on right here. And it appears like the conditions for an end to this situation between Ukraine and Russia, given all these things that we're now seeing in the theater, it might be in the offing. How do you see it, Craig?
Well, first off, I'd like to point out that I think your Mongolian is better than your Ukrainian, for sure. We just got to get that out there. But look, there's a lot of people who thought that October 7th was allowed to happen, that the Israelis knew it would happen. And there's a lot of talk right now that the Russians knew that they were going to make this, you know, incursion into Kursk, and they allowed them to come on in. And at the end of the day, it would seem like a brilliant plan if they knew this was happening. You know, they've lessened their forces in the Donbass. The Russians are breaking through over there on the defensive hold. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, what stupid of a move. Like I said, I think this was to win the information battle, Rick, where they wanted to get more money, wanted to get more funding. And by, you know, hitting them some headlines that they penetrated into Russia, the first time since World War II, I mean, they might help them get money, but it's a different situation than it is in Ukraine when it comes to the government trying to convince their citizens than it is in Israel.
Well, you know, and remember, you and I are old enough to remember in the old days when it used to be the Soviet Union, and we always used to call them the bear. We always used to talk about, you know, don't wake up the sleeping bear, don't poke the bear. Well, this is more than a poke, and this week we've seen what we've seen the Russians do militarily is they've actually increased some of their actions, going after cities they maybe would not have gone to. And attacked, and certainly increasing their movement into Provost, one of the most important hubs in that whole area. So he may have actually poked the bear, using the old adage.
Yeah, absolutely. I heard that some of the troops in the Kursk area, the Russian troops were playing the song Hotel California. You can check out anytime you like, but you can never leave. And they're trying to get back to the Donbass. And they're not allowed to. The Russians are just picking them off one by one. But I think, Rick, that a lot has to be said about how the Russians are conducting this war. You know, they could have wiped out Ukraine from day one. They have the power, but they don't want to do so because they look at a lot of the Ukrainians as their brothers. So being able to remove the Ukrainians methodically seem to be their game plan, and they seem to be pulling it off. But it really is a shame right now. Almost 500,000 Ukrainian lives lost in this war. Oh, it's just,
yeah,
it's sad.
No, you're right. The numbers are all over the place. But look, you're absolutely right to say that in a situation like this, it's never good for either side. And the sooner Russia comes to the table and comes up with some kind of deal, as well as Ukraine, the better for all of us and for the entire world, and certainly for the Ukrainian people and the Russian people. So, you know, listen, all we can do is watch. All right, when we come back, I want to talk about something else. Imagine if, imagine this. The President of the United States goes to some country. He goes there, you know, on Air Force One. I'm acting like I'm flying a plane. I don't know how. He arrives in Air Force One, and while he's there, somebody confiscates his plane. That just happened, but it wasn't the United States. I'll tell you who it is when we come back. Hey, welcome back. I'm Rick Sanchez. Craig Jardula is joining us as well. And let's talk about this, Craig. You ready? Imagine if the President of the United States traveled to another country, and while he or she were there, their plane, Air Force One, was seized. Now, it takes some kind of chutzpah, right? Some kind of audaciousness, right? Well, it's kind of what the United States just did to the President of Venezuela. They seized his plane while he was in the Dominican Republic because they say, well, they don't agree with the way that he bought it, that he violated U.S. rules. U.S. rules, not some rules. It's kind of crazy, right? Even the special agent who actually facilitated this, right? The FBI agent whose job it was, you know, they said, hey, go get that plane, right? So he's now being interviewed by reporters, and he's having a tough time explaining what he did or why he did it.
So today we've seized a Venezuelan-owned aircraft predominantly used by Venezuelan President Nicolas Maduro in violation of U.S. sanctions and other matters that we're looking at into the aircraft.
What does that mean?
So today we seized the aircraft in violation of U.S. sanctions against Venezuela by the United States government.
Are you able to explain kind of what the sanctions were?
So it's the ongoing existing sanctions that the OFAC has levied against Venezuela for years now.
I almost feel sorry for the guy. It's like, so what did you do? Oh, we just stole that plane. Why? Oh, we just did. We just took the plane. And why did you take the plane? Sanctions. What sanctions? Oh, you know, the sanction thing. Sanctions. Like, there's just something silly about the whole thing. And I don't know. Go ahead, Craig.
Well, I mean, I think the arrogance of this intelligence agent over here kind of mirror the arrogance of the United States foreign policy. They couldn't steal the elections. They can't steal their gold. They can't steal their oils. Venezuelans, that is. So now they're trying to steal anything they could. They're playing. So, I mean, also the fact that we see the DR, we know completely right now that they are a client state of the United States.
Dominican Republic.
This is kind of crazy over here. I'm just wondering how they're going to manufacture consent to continuously get involved with these countries and interfere and do whatever they want.
Yeah.
Sooner or later, the American people got to say, enough is enough, Rick. You got to stop.
Well, what they seem to be trying to do in Venezuela, they were able to pull off in the Dominican Republic when they removed the Trujillo government many, many years ago by sending in the Marines, and then the CIA went in there and did what they have to do. You know, we all know that. That's part of Latin American history as far as U.S. engagement goes. But, you know, it's just funny that they haven't figured out that they're helping Maduro. I mean, I know this because I'm Cuban. For years, Fidel Castro stayed in power by telling the Cuban people, the gringos, the Yankees, are coming to attack us at any moment now. You need me to protect you from them. What do you think Maduro is saying right now in Venezuela to the Venezuelan people? They just took my plane. I need your help. And what are they going to say? Mostly the poor people of Venezuela who voted for him. We love you even more now, Mr. Commander-in-Chief, or whatever the hell they call him. It's dumb. Forget everything else. It's just dumb. It's bad. It's bad geopolitics to do stuff like this.
It's counterproductive, Rick. When I go to a lot of these countries and I've observed 5 elections in Latin America, most of these people, whether they be conservative, liberal, leftist, rightist, they want their national sovereignty. They want the right to call who they want to elect the government they want and do what they want with their resources, not the United States. So you're 100% right, Rick. When the United States pulls these moves off, it's counterproductive, and it just empowers the government that's already there.
Yeah. We don't like him because he's a socialist. Well, it's their socialist, not ours. They can choose. They can choose a fascist, a socialist, a communist, a greenie, whatever the hell they want. I mean, it's not our place to decide who we like or who they like, for that matter. Yeah, this is a fascinating conversation. Okay, Vice President Kamala Harris, she did the interview. She was interviewed for the first time, no less by a friendly interviewer at CNN. Seemed halting, cautious, not exactly inspiring, all the while taking these questions from somebody who she should have been really comfortable with. I mean, look, Dana Bash, I worked with Dana. She's not a bad person, but I'll be honest with you, she's very friendly to the Democratic Party. And she brings to the interview, I think, a clear bias toward most of Ms. Harris's positions. So Ms. Harris, Kamala Harris, should have killed it in this interview. She should have done great.
Turn the page on the last decade of what I believe has been contrary to where the spirit of our country really lies.
But the last decade, of course, the last 3.5 years, has been part of your administration.
I'm talking about an era that started about a decade ago.
Look, kudos to Dana Bash for pointing that out. I mean, she says, we got to change. The last 10 years have been absolutely horrible. And then Dana Bash says, well, you know, you guys were in charge the last 4 years. Well, you know, that's not exactly what I meant. But look, here's what I think. Kamala Harris gives great speeches. She reads a speech off a teleprompter. It's awesome. And I think she's doing a great job as a candidate enforcing, you know, that vote that was unsure about Biden. And she's getting it now. So kudos to her and her team for doing that. She's not so good in a one-on-one interview. She's not so good without the teleprompter, I think. She wasn't horrible, but she just was different, right? Is that fair?
Well, she's awesome. She's also not so good at random questions coming at her. This is, you know, this has been going on for years with Kamala Harris. They try to hide her as much as they can, keep her in the echo chamber. But you're absolutely right, Rick. This interview was on the Clinton News Network, CNN, right? And she should have knocked this thing out of the park. In fact, the only good part of this election, the only good part of this interview is when they asked a question about Donald Trump's rhetoric towards her, and she says, I'm going to take a pass. I'm going to take the high road. That was it. At the end of the day, she stumbled, fumbled all over the place, and they weren't even hard questions, Rick.
Yeah, no, she wasn't horrible, but this is not her thing. Right. I mean, maybe that's OK. But I will tell you this, and this is an important conversation that I'm about to have with you. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. Nobody gives a crap about whether a candidate goes on CNN or goes on Fox or goes on whatever, CBS, ABC. They don't care. We realized, President Obama was the first one to realize this. If you go back and you talk to some of his handlers, they learned that they don't need to kowtow to the media. They don't need to do interviews with the media. She did this interview because after a while they said, you know, everybody's talking about the fact you didn't do an interview. So she said, okay, I'll do the interview. They don't care. This is not going to make or break people voting for her. The only people who are going to watch the interview are people who watch CNN. The only people who will watch Trump when he does an interview with Fox are the people who are already voting for him on Fox. Media is just... Let me just use the vernacular. It ain't what it used to be, my friend.
Yeah, and she doesn't need to even talk about policy, Rick. I was in the streets of Chicago with her supporters, and they're voting based upon their feelings. She makes me feel good. She makes me feel right. So, I mean, we're just in a total co-opted, controlled environment where it's red team versus blue team, and at the end of the day, people aren't looking for policy or answers. They're just looking for confirmation bias.
But by the way, here's where I disagree with you. Feelings are good. If a president is able to... Clinton had that power. Reagan, oh, my God. He made America feel good about itself without ever talking about anything substantive. But when he did finally have to talk about substantive details, he nailed it. He was okay with it. He did pretty good at it. But Reagan was great at what you just said. And if Kamala Harris could at least pull that off, you know, good on her. But at some point, you got to pay the piper. You know, you got to come with something other than a beautiful smile and good looks and an attractive laugh. You got to bring something else.
I'm bringing joy, Rick. I got joy for you, my man.
See, now you're making fun of Kamala Harris's and her campaign, and that's not fair, Mr. Jardula. All right, U.S. Attorney General comes out. He's warning Americans about election interference once again, points again to Russia, China, and Iran as potential culprits, and then went on to name some influencers allegedly connected to RT who were secretly paid to propagate, allegedly, information that could affect how people vote in the upcoming presidential election. That's it. That's fair. In fact, here's Merrick Garland, who I think would have made a great Supreme Court justice, myself, explaining.
The American people are entitled to know when a foreign power is attempting to exploit our country's free exchange of ideas in order to send around its own propaganda.
He's right. Absolutely. And if that's what they want to stop... Then I have to have another question that he has to ask for me. Where's the consistency? There's this giant 2-ton elephant sitting in that room in front of him that he apparently doesn't see. Let me share that 2-ton elephant with you and what it looks like. Because we agree. Our job here, for example, my job is not to take sides. It's to be transparent. It's to tell you the truth. And, you know, nobody tells me what to say. I write this show. See this? I wrote this, you know? U.S. lawmakers, meanwhile, speaking of transparency, receive more than $58 million from the government of Israel and its lobbyists in the last election cycle. It is why they voted against the ceasefire recommendation. And during the first 6 weeks of its war on Gaza, members of Congress received, on average, $125,000 from pro-Israeli lobby groups, according to OpenSecrets.org. So... you know, yes, no government has the right to go to another place or another country and pay people to secretly tell people how to vote. Got it. Agreed. And if somehow RT did that, they shouldn't have. But what about Israel? I mean, they literally are buying politicians to affect our policy and our politics. How about that?
Yeah, Rick, I'm glad you pointed it out, because I was going to point it out if you didn't. How about Israel? But, you know, when it comes to the whole Russia situation, this is like Russiagate 3.0 at this point. It's like Hollywood remaking a bad movie. It's like, why are you doing this?
Yeah.
But there is a lot of programming and conditioning that goes on with how bad the Russians are. So I think that's why it could be pulled off. I mean, I rooted for the Mujahideen in Rambo 3 because, you know, Rocky had fought against the Russian in Rocky 4.
Right.
So they've already programmed into our psyche that Russia is the enemy, that Russia is bad.
Which is fine. You could do all you want. But if you're going to have a policy that says you can't do this, you can't just say our friends can do it or this group over here can do it, but this group over here cannot. That's not consistent. That's not transparent. That's against everything that we as Americans stand for when it comes to fairness. That's all. That's all I'm saying. I'm not saying one side's guilty, anything like that. You probably agree. Down to about 15 seconds. Take us out.
Yeah, just really quickly, they're the only democracy in the Middle East. We need them. They're like the aircraft carrier over there, so we can go along with it if it's someone we like.
Yeah, but that's not what I teach my children that they're supposed to do or how they're supposed to act, and it is what it is. All right. Thank you, my friend. Great conversation. This was fun. That's our show. Remember, always look outside your own box. Truths, they don't live in boxes. I'm Rick Sanchez. We'll be looking for you next time.